You got another night of yours truly, Ricky Ricardo's in business. And we're going to be here, as Lionel Richie once said, all night long, all night, all the way to 5 o'clock on The Fan. We've got a lot to talk about. Yep, believe it or not, we do have a lot to talk about. The calendar has changed into what many of you dread, Friday the 13th. And right there, that should be a tipping point of part of what we're going to talk about tonight. Before Lou Gower leaves that studio, Connor Green or Fleegs, whoever's there, Return of the Mac, his favorite song, I Am Responsible For, and that's a true story. Okay? Lou Gower's favorite song we just talked about just a few minutes ago, Return of the Mac, Mark Morrison. I brought it back from Europe in the early 90s from NIDEM. NIDEM is a music conference that they have in France. And we used to go every year to hear new music that had not been licensed yet in the United States. And my program director at the time, I was the assistant, we picked it up, loved it, brought back the import. Remember back then in the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, used to get the import version before a label in the U.S. would have picked up a song. And Mark Morrison's Return of the Mac was an import. It didn't have a label. We brought it back, started playing it, and Atlantic Records picked it up, and boom, it took off like a rocket. But who was the first one to play it on New York radio? You're listening to him right here, my friend. Right here, live from Tampa. We're just a couple of blocks down the street from George M. Steinbrenner Field once again. So the first workouts with pitchers and catchers were held today, and there's really not much to report. Other than Cam Schlittler's slightly inflamed lower back, and they're going to shut him down for a couple of days. Nothing major, nothing to worry about. That's what I was told. Hey, be assured that it is not a major problem, and we will keep our eyes on it anyway. Max Fried talked to some reporters today. Nothing major to report there. Gerrit Cole will meet the media on Friday, so later today after the workout, probably about 1:30, 2 o'clock. We'll get the words of one Gerrit Cole on Friday as spring training slowly but surely develops. All right, lots of topics to get into tonight. I am going to take the high road on Giant ownership. And once again, it came out today, a lot more of this Jeffrey Epstein email back and forth. And simply because, number one, simply because I'm the Philadelphia Eagle broadcaster, and I don't want anybody to say that I'm taking sides because I do the Eagles and it's the Giants. I don't want anybody to accuse me of this. So I'm going to not opine. I am going to open that subject up if any of you want to opine, okay, on what happened and how you would handle it, how you take it as a Giant fan. With the Tish Epstein situation. I will leave that up to you. Because, like I said, I don't want to be accused of being any type of Eagle homer. I do their play-by-play. Okay? And this is a serious, very, very serious matter. So, as a Giant fan, with more information that you received today, if you want to opine about it, that's what we have this forum for. Personally, I'm just going to leave it in your hands, number one. Number two. We can discuss anything having to do with the Yanks, obviously, or the Mets. But the owners, which I thought was very, very interesting, the owners, very quietly, are having meetings down in West Palm Beach, just across the state here. And there were several headlines that came out of the owners' meetings today. Number one, let me throw this out at you, okay? And this has to do with a couple of Yankee players and Rojas, the third base coach. So the owners today voted that the third base and first base coaches have to stay in their coach's box, in the coaching box, until the pitch is thrown. Now, the reason for this, and I was not aware that they really cracked down on this during the World Series, and especially in Game 7 of the World Series. These are all reports that came out this afternoon. Because they think, anyway, that third base coaches, and sometimes on the first base line, but mostly third base coaches, stand way, way back, away at an angle, out of the coach's box. And somehow or another, especially the Blue Jays people, were accused of passing signs to hitters about pitches that were coming. Now, that's been going on in baseball since there was baseball. But, for whatever reason, it stuck up somebody's craw, and now, officially, starting this season, the coaches have to stay in their respective coaching boxes until the pitch is thrown. Now, Louis Rojas, for example, the Yankee third base coach. Have you seen where Louis stands, where he puts himself when Giancarlo Stanton is at the plate? It is a matter of safety, of saving your own life when either Judge or but especially Giancarlo, who pulls these line drive foul balls at over 100 miles an hour. And Louis Rojas, and I don't blame him, I'd do it too. He goes back behind that coach's box a good, 10, 15 feet, and at an angle where, it's harder anyway to get struck by a line drive foul ball from a guy like Giancarlo Stanton. And I'm not going to just say it's just Giancarlo, but he is the guy. Okay? I mean, a ball coming off the bat of Giancarlo Stanton hits you, you're in trouble. So now, Louis Rojas can't leave the coach's box until the pitch is thrown. So can you imagine, this year when you're watching a Yankee game, you go to the ballpark, keep your eye on the third base coach who's going to be backtracking quickly once that pitcher is releasing the baseball with a guy like Vladimir Guerrero or Giancarlo Stanton or one of these, big-time right-handed pull hitters. These coaches are going to be running for their lives once the pitch is released because the rule was passed today, voted on, and they're going to enforce it, that the coaches have to stay in the coach's box until the pitch is thrown. That's number one. More news coming out of the owners' meetings today. So the commissioner, Rob Manfred, I guess was asked, and I don't know how these numbers leaked out, but they did leak out. Asked about the negotiations coming up. We've been talking about it now for weeks. That at the end of the 2026 season, December 1st to be exact, that there will more than likely be a lockout. Because the owners are looking for a salary cap. Players Association doesn't want a salary cap. But if we're going to negotiate a cap, there must be a floor. Which right now there isn't one either. There is no cap, but there is no floor. So get this, folks. And you got to opine on this. 888-808-1019. Lines are open. 888-808-1019. So the initial offer that's going to get put on the table, this is what saw the light of day this afternoon, is supposedly that ownership is going to propose a salary cap of $240 million per club, and a salary floor of $150 million. So what that means, for example, the Miami Marlins, I believe, were the team with the lowest payroll at the end of the season, or at least going into this season. Their payroll was somewhere in the low $60 million. Kyle Tucker, Juan Soto make almost as much in one season as the entire Miami Marlins payroll. So if you twist the arm of the Miami Marlins, and I don't want to just pick on them, it'll be the Pirates and the Rays and all these teams that are, quote unquote, small market, small budget. But if you force these clubs to spend $150 million, that's the floor, so it's a little bit more than double what the lowest payroll is right now. Does that sound quasi-acceptable to you? But I tell you what, to propose a salary ceiling of $240 million, let's hope that that's just a starter. Because, for example, right now the Dodger payroll this season is going to be over $400 million. The Mets are going to be near the $400 million plateau. The Yankees will be somewhere in the high $300 million as far as their payroll. The Phillies, Red Sox. So to propose a cap of 240 with a floor of 150, you're talking about 90 million in the middle. I don't think there's a snowball's chance in you know where that the Players Association would accept a cap, a top end number of 240 million. So let's just hope beyond hope that that is a number to begin negotiating. It's going to have to go up probably into the mid 300 millions. And maybe with escalations year after year, eventually get to close to $400 million with a floor closer to $200 million. But if these numbers are correct, and those were reported today by several guys that are covering the owners' meetings in Palm Beach, if those numbers are correct, then they are miles apart from reaching an agreement. And who knows what's going to happen and how long it's going to take for these guys to get on the same page, the union and the owners. Now, I get it. That's for down the line after the season's over. But keep that in the back of your mind as you're watching baseball during the 2026 season. And hopefully they'll negotiate quietly behind the scenes during the season. And let's pray and hope beyond hope that at some point they surprise us and say, hey, we came to an agreement. There will be no stoppage. There'll be no lockout. Business as usual. The winter meetings in 26 in San Diego. They were just here in Orlando this past month, back in December. So let's hope beyond hope that they come to an agreement. But if the initial numbers that were leaked out today are correct, of a top of 240 and a bottom of 150, there is no way that the Players Association is going to accept that. They're going to laugh at 240 as being a salary cap for franchises in Major League Baseball. Then the next thing that has come out of those owners' meetings today, and I had not even given this any thought whatsoever. Who's back at the shop? Fleegs, you there, or is it Connor? Who we got?
No, I'm here now.
Okay, there's Fleegs.
You got podcasting Blue Hour show, so we're good.
You got an opinion on that 240 and 150? As far as the salary cap is concerned, we'll pick your brain on that. But the next thing that was discussed today,
I was told there would be no math.
The next thing that was discussed today is that major leaguers are going to be, they're almost at an agreement. The commissioner said today that we're almost there, and it'll probably get worked out, that major league players are going to participate in the 2028 Los Angeles Olympics. So baseball will be back in the Olympics, and it won't be any amateurs. It won't be college guys. They are getting closer and closer to working out a deal. The games would be at Dodger Stadium. Remember the Summer Olympics in 2028 in L.A.? And what was proposed, I saw today, is a stoppage of play after the All-Star game in mid-July, and then a six-day tournament, Olympic baseball, at Dodger Stadium as part of the 2028 Summer Olympics. Now, can you imagine, and looking ahead, now we might see a preview of it with Team USA and the World Baseball Classic coming up next month in March. But in an Olympic setting at Dodger Stadium midsummer, when guys are in, you know, mid-season form, a Team USA, a literal dream team that we have had in basketball on a couple of occasions. I watched the U.S. men's hockey team this afternoon. They're repeating the game right now. I'm getting another. It's a machine. The USA men's hockey team. I mean, it's line after line, wave after wave of nothing but NHL superstars. Can you imagine Team USA in the 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles taking the field? Who would you put on that team? I mean, by 2028, Aaron Judge is still in his prime years. You would figure maybe Judge would be getting reintroduced, and especially if they have success this year in the World Baseball Classic, you would think that Team USA would be led again by the captain. But some of the up-and-coming American talent that would make up Team USA in the 2028 Olympic Games in baseball, are you okay with that? As a baseball fan, would you be okay? Look, the NHL has shut itself down here for, what, 2-3 weeks, whatever it is, for the Olympic hockey in Milano Cortina, Italia. Would you be okay with baseball shutting down for, I don't know, a week, 10 days? They said, from what I read today, they would have the All-Star game as usual. And post the All-Star game, I guess that, you know, combination of the two All-Star teams, one super team, dream team, would then be in L.A. and participate in a six-day tournament to win the gold medal in baseball. Is that something that excites you as a baseball fan? It kind of tickles me a little bit. I got to be honest with you. I love the World Baseball Classic, and the thought of a dream team of USA baseball participating in the Olympics against probably, I guess, the powerhouses, Japan, Dominican Republic, Venezuela, Puerto Rico. But in an Olympic setting in July, mid-season form, not in March like the WBC where, you know, guys are just getting to camp with a couple of weeks under their belt. This would be in July in front of the entire world, mid-season form, LA 28, Major League Baseball participating in the Olympics. Is that something that interests you? I do. I find it, the idea fascinating. 888-808-1019. Now, you know, whenever I'm on the radio, we do a little something that has nothing to do with sports. So tonight is a double whammy. Because as of the stroke of midnight, ladies and gentlemen, as I mentioned when we opened up, it is now Friday the 13th. So Friday the 13th, there is the superstition that it is a very unlucky day. There are several superstitions, and I went back and did a little research of why the number 13 is considered a negative, unlucky, almost demonic in certain places. And it's deep. It's really something. I really don't want to get into the history of it because we'd have to go down a well that I really don't want to go into. But Friday the 13th has been known as a day you dread. I'm superstitious. I have my own set of superstitions. Okay? For example, I am convinced sometimes, and you may think I'm weird. You probably do already. But I am convinced sometimes that I see things before they happen. And that the only way that they don't happen after I have already envisioned it is that I knock on wood. So I'm one of these guys that, you know, just a thought comes in my head. Uh-oh, I don't like that thought. I better get it out of my head, knock on wood before it happens. And I have sometimes I will go during one entire day, you'll see me knocking on wood 10, 20 times because it's just built in me. It's a superstition of mine that I am convinced there's certain things that I see in my head, and then they happen a few hours later or a few minutes later. And if I don't want them to happen, I just knock on wood and they don't happen. That's a superstition of mine. I actually believe this. So if you'd like to open up and share about your superstitions on this Friday the 13th, you're more than welcome. And since it is Friday the 13th, we go to movies. So Friday the 13th is one of the one of the brands of horror movies that has had the most success ever, Friday the 13th. It is not, for me, the horror movie of my lifetime. I got to be honest with you. I am now in my early 60s, and to this day, the one horror movie that still scares me the same way it did when I first saw it is the original Exorcist. The William Peter Blatty, The Exorcist. The original one. Okay? That still to this day is, to me, the scariest movie of my lifetime. So because it's Friday the 13th, I got a little double whammy going. What is your superstitions and what horror movie, number one, just give me one, that to this day still scares you the most? I think we'll have some fun with it. 888-808-1019. Michael Fliegelman is producing our program. Good evening to you, my friend. You all right? You there?
Good. What are you talking about? Good evening. It's good morning, Ricky. It's 12:22.
Well, it's in New York. It's Thursday night still. It's just past midnight. You know, if we were in Nebraska, it's tomorrow.
This is my daily conundrum.
Well, and for me, it doesn't really become tomorrow till like 3 in the morning, right? You know what I mean?
I get what you mean, but listen, this is my Friday. After this, I'm done for the weekend, so the sooner we get from night to morning means the closer I am to the weekend.
Well, if it helps your, mental stance for the program, good morning, Ms. Fleegs. How are
good
you,
morning,
buddy?
Ricky.
What do you think of the salary cap numbers?
I don't hate it if the floor is high. I don't want baseball to end up like the other sports. I kind of like that there's no salary cap. I just wish that these small market teams would even pretend to be competitive.
But the Kyle Tucker contract is the last straw. It really is the biggest blow to labor peace is the money the Dodgers spent on Kyle Tucker. You know Kyle Tucker's not worth $60 million a year. And Bo Bichette's not a $42 million a year player.
No, of course not. I get it. But that's also, we get into the issue of years. These teams would rather spend money now than spread it out long term. And the big issue with the Dodgers is the luxury tax number. And because of the Ohtani contract, both real dollars and the fake dollars, they're able to have a financial advantage. It's just not possible for anybody else. It's a weird circumstance.
You okay with the pros playing in the Olympics in 28? Baseball as an Olympic sport, Dodger Stadium, July? How about that?
I mean, I don't care about these international competitions, but it matters so much to the players, so it feels inevitable.
It is, right? It does feel inevitable. And if you're Louis Rojas,
I'm a Mets fan. I already watched my team lose a season because of the stupid World Baseball Classic. So, I mean, if it's the Olympics, whatever.
What if you're a third base coach, right? Here's Giancarlo Stanton at the plate, and you can't leave the coach's box until the pitch is thrown. I mean, just picture this.
How are they going to enforce that? Who's paying attention to that?
I'm telling
you. Don't the umpires have enough going on that they already can't handle?
The third base umpire, I'm assuming the third base umpire will keep his eye on the third base coach and vice versa on the first base line. And according to the reports today, they really cracked down on it in the World Series, which wasn't really made public, or at least I didn't see anything about it, but that's what was said today, that they cracked down on it during the World Series.
If they're going to crack down on that, when are they going to get to guys standing like 45 feet away from the on-deck circle when they're on deck?
That might be next. Who knows? They may discuss that tomorrow down in Palm Beach where they're having the owners' meeting. You notice these owners' meetings are very quiet until the news is made and,
Well, anything they can do to avoid talking about how to not have a sport that is reaching new heights of popularity and has a ton of momentum. Anything to not discuss how to make sure they don't screw that up next season and have a long work stoppage. Yeah.
The issue, here's the big issue, though, and I'm completely serious. Baseball has no idea what to do with the local broadcast. You know how many teams now MLB is going to have to produce this year because the regional sports networks around the country, you know, have gone out of business? That delivery system of the games, with the exception of, you know, Yankees, Dodgers, Mets, Phils, Red Sox. But, you know, short of that, the RSO, the regional sports, RSNs, I should say, the regional sports networks around the country, that model is, like, you know, in the toilet. And Major League Baseball is going to produce, I believe it's like 14, and maybe the Los Angeles Angels might come under this now. Also, they don't. Right now, the LA Angels don't have a place for their fans to watch the games. Nowhere. It's spring training already. And if you're an Angel fan living in the number two market in Los Angeles, Anaheim, it's part of the LA market. If you're an Angels fan tonight, you right now don't know where you're going to be able to watch Angels baseball, which I think is, are you kidding me? You can't make this stuff up. So that's another serious business hurdle that Major League Baseball is having to deal with. All right, all of that stuff's on the table, folks.